We ended last week with Pasuk Chaf Dalet. Just a few more comments on that Pasuk. Pasuk Chaf Dalet, basically every time the daughter of Pare comes up and mentioned in a Pasuk, it turns out to be a pretty charged Pasuk, right? With a lot. The whole subject is a charged subject. The Perek Tes, Pasuk Chaf Dalet, we're going to repeat the Pasuk. At Bas Pare, also Meir David. The daughter of Paroi came up from the city of David, meaning Yerushalayim, El Beisa Shabbanala, to the home that Shlomo HaMelech built for her, Az Bonas HaMiloi. It was at that time that he built the Miloi. As we explained, he built her not just a home, but he built her like a whole neighborhood for herself. Meaning she had her quarters there, plus all her servants and her entourage. She gave her birthday present, her own little neighborhood, and it was in this Miloy area. This was like a vacant area at the edge of Yerushalayim that David HaMelech had left as an open lot to accommodate the Oilei Regalim and etc. Now, we discussed last week at length how Shlomo HaMelech did not want to leave her in Yerushalayim, and he therefore set her up in this way outside of Yerushalayim. What's that? Oh, so we added the point of the Malbim, what the Malbim said, that he didn't fit it to put it to her that way. What he told her was, you're so dear to me that I didn't want to just give you your own room or your own wing. I wanted to give you your own neighborhood, whole area. Okay?
The land that he gave her was about zone for people making the...
Okay. So that's what we didn't actually get to last week. Good. So Rashi points out, really? So we already explained how, right, Shlomo HaMelech explained what was behind the understanding that Yerushalayim should remain the epitome of purity at the end of the day. She's coming from the outside with all of his great intents, etc. He was still creating a certain segregation. Let's leave the complete purity pure and unadulterated, and we'll put her here. Now, we're going to learn later about the insubordination of Yerovam ben Nevat. Yerovam ben Nevat, if you've heard his name, you have a negative association, right? He was the infamous king, first king of the 10 tribes, who built temples for idolatry, etc. Built temples for idolatry. Okay, but at this point in time, Yerovam ben Nevat was a revered Jewish sage, big Talmud Chacham, and he actually took a very courageous and meritorious step of what? This came a little bit later, but he chastised Shlomo for doing this. Why? Because on the contrary, he made exactly the point that you just made. He said, David HaMelech designated this area for the benefit of those coming to the Aliyah L'Regel. Right? And here, you're going and building it up and dedicating it to the daughter of Paro. Now, we already explained.
How was that the public that was known? Because that obviously David HaMelech did it before people started coming up.
I don't know. There was a very...
The Biz HaMikdash wasn't there.
I guess it was known. You're right. I guess it was known that he had dedicated it for that purpose. Good point. So, and his point was really taking the point that we were making last week a little bit further. Shlomo HaMelech, basically, this is his point. Shlomo HaMelech, kol hakavod, again, you have this program, this campaign to be mekarev of the whole world. And you're even realizing that you should still keep that separate. The heart of the Jewish people has to remain unadulterated. But even this was a mistake, he's saying. So go ahead. This area was intended for the comfort and to make it more comfortable and feasible for the Oilei Regalim to come. This is compromising that. So Shlomo HaMelech is saying, one minute, I have this great campaign, fine, so we'll find other accommodations. No. Do not compromise in the smallest way the service of the Jewish people, right? This was intended by David HaMelech to make it easier for the Oilei Regalim to come. With all the respect to bringing all the guys, you're going to say something? What's that? In Yerushalayim, it could be that there weren't. Perhaps there weren't. They say, with all the respect to that very great campaign, do not compromise at all the service or the quality of the service of the Jewish people. This was meant to make the Aliyah LeRegel easier, more doable, etc. Even just this, compromising that, it's just not worth it. It's not worth it. Which brings us back to this fundamental point that we stressed last week, we're reiterating it again. All bringing others into the fold, etc., 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 is not worth compromising in the smallest way the level and the quality of the service, the standards of the service of those who are already close. And therefore, yes, want to go out and spread the word to the Goyim, etc., etc., fine. But that can only come after the Jewish people on the optimal state, which is Shlomo HaMelech was operating that way too, but not to compromise it in any way. This was the point Yerovam HaMelech came, Yerovam Ben Nevat came and censured Shlomo about this, and he was actually credited for this. This was considered a very great step on his part, and that was one of the things that he did that made him worthy. Hashem deemed him worthy. At the end of the day, he was given the throne of the 10 tribes by the direct word of Hashem. Hashem sent the Navi to tell him, you're going to get that throne. Hashem considered him the appropriate candidate, the worthy candidate. And this was one of the reasons that he got it. So making this point to Shlomo HaMelech was a very courageous thing to do. As we'll see. Okay. What's that?
What was your name?
Asking the wrong person. I don't know. What's that?
Was she the only wife that she did this
for? You get the impression that she was like the prized wife. Not sure. I don't know. Okay. You know, we're going to get to the sugya of Yerovam Ben Nevat. There are a lot of lessons to be learned from it. But l'maisa, the answer is that at this point he is completely and totally sincere. And yes, often a person, when it's on the theoretical level, you see things very clear, right? Once it becomes l'maisa, things become less clear. But at this point, he was totally sincere to the extent that not only would we have thought so, but Hashem himself gave him that credit.
Did someone else have an alternative solution?
For Bas Paroi?
No, for the Aliyah LeRegel.
I don't know. We would imagine that there were other alternatives. I mean, we must assume so. The way it worked later in history was that they either rented or were given lodging with the people of Yerushalayim. So presumably there were other aces. It's not like this stopped. Shlomo HaMelech definitely his intent wasn't to stop the Aliyah LeRegel. Undoubtedly, there were other ways that it could work out. But this is something that Shlomo HaMelech had intended as really make it comfortable, and this is what happened. Okay. Oh, I don't know. This is attributed solely to him. I don't know. It's clear this is just a royal decision that wasn't necessarily an issue with the Sanhedrin. It wasn't a question. L'chaira, it seems that it wasn't a question of halacha per se. It was a question of judgment. Okay. We move on. Now we continue. V'hema Shleima Shalosh Pamim Bashana. Now, after we described everything that Shleima did to build the Beis HaMikdash, etc., etc., now it continues and says that he also provided three times a year Oilos Shlamim HaMizbeach HaShem Bona LaHashem. He provided Oilos Shlamim for the three regalim, for the Mizbeach that he had built for Hashem, because of the Beis HaMikdash. He provided the Karbanos. Vehikdir Itai, and also he provided the Kairos that they would offer up on the Mizbeach HaKairos, Asher Lifnei Hashem, that was before Hashem. Veshilam Es HaBois, and he completed the house, meaning He completed not only the Binyan Beis HaMikdash, and the Pashim say, even though it says three times a year, we'll see in a minute why it was emphasized three times a year, but actually, he did the job completely and totally, meaning he built the Beis HaMikdash, and then in addition, he provided all the Karbanos, the Mefarshim say, for the rest of his life. All the Karbanos, all the Tmidim, all the Musafim, all the Ktairis, all the Karbanos Tzibur, he provided for the rest of his life. Now the Torah stresses the three regalim to add even more than that, the Mefarshim say, that he provided not only the regular Karbanos Tzibur, but during the three regalim he would add Oilus Shlamim, he would add, in addition to the Tzmidim and the Musafim of the regular, he would add Shlamim. Every Jew who came apparently registered with the office, with the royal office, and he would provide Hagigas for each individual who came, meaning those are the Karbanos that you bought to eat with your family. So not only did he provide all the communal karbanis, but in the three regalim, all the other regalim who came, he provided individual karbanis for them to eat with their families. What's that? So I doubt, this presumably doesn't mean that he could provide or would provide things that they were personally obligated to. Right? These were extras, so to speak. Okay. Momentarily, but you know that. What's that? No, in a regular basis, he provided just a karbanos tzibur. A karbanos tzibur, not individual karbanos. It said by the three regalim, the people would come, he would provide chagigas for. Chagigas are the karbanos that you bring for the celebration of the Aliyah L'Regel. You bring the karban and then eat it with your family. Not that he provided the karbanos for every individual who came all throughout the year. I was wondering about the point that Rav Meir is raising. Rav Meir is asking on there, wasn't the collection of the Machlis HaShekel for the Karbanos Tzibur? It's also more than that. It's not just that they collected Machlis HaShekel for that. The din is that Karbanos Tzibur, communal Karbanos, cannot be privately donated. Okay, they have to be bought by the Tzibur. What's that? What? You're right. There were three boxes. Right. There were three different funds. Right. So, I'm guessing that we must say there is a concept of donating to the communal fund. Meaning, you can't say, I'm sponsoring today's Tamid Le'ilu Nishmas, my great-grandfather. Right? There's no such thing. The Tzibur, and the Musafim, the communal karbanis, have to come from the money of the Tzibur, the communal fund. But there is such a thing as donating to the communal fund. So it's possible that what this means is that Shlomo HaMelech provided, completely funded the communal fund by himself, single-handedly, for all those years. What happened with the Machlis HaShekel during those years? I don't know. Maybe they used it for what they used when they were halachas of what happened when there was an excess of Machlis HaShekel. They used it to kayitz HaMizbeach, meaning when they had extra money, it was what they called kayitz HaMizbeach. They never wanted the Mizbeach to be sitting idle. So if there was a quiet period between the morning Tamid and the afternoon Tamid, there was nobody bringing Karbanos in the interim, they had a special fund for kayitz HaMizbeach. Special Karbanos, they would just keep bringing all along. There were always Karbanos being brought up in the Mizbeach. So that was one of the things that the excess shekel money went for. I guess that's what we'll have to say. Vishilan the Sabayas, and he completed the house. So yeah, just ties back with the previous pasuk. As we noted, some of the Mefarshim say that it couldn't really be considered as having completed the house. We already saw that completing the house doesn't just mean finishing the physical construction, and then bringing it to full operation, full spiritual operation. That was a lot of work also, right, as we saw. This could only come after the previous puzzle. When he moved Bas Paray out of Yerushalayim, now we can say that he brought the house to its completion. Okay? We move on. The Ani Asa HaMelech Shleima, he also made ships, a fleet of ships. Apparently, this was a novelty in those days. Ships are not so common as they were as history progressed. But he also had a fleet of ships, Be'etzin Gover, Asher is Elois. In Etzin Gover, that was with Elois, I'm presuming that that's related to Eilat, right? I'm not sure. It is?
There is a place next to Eilat called Elot.
Oh, yeah? Ah, it's still called today Elot, yeah. Okay. Asfas Yamsu, Be'eretz Eder, which was at the edge of the Yamsu, bordering on the land of Eder. Now, I'll just make a note of Moshe Dovin Bali. There's a little insight here. He's always, we put Rav Moshe Dovin Bali often. It's a sefer that is the Talmud, one of the foremost Talmudim of the Ramchal. His sefer is a perush that is 80% Kabbalah, 10% Pshat, and 10% real profound insight in terms of Musar, understanding the profundity of what was going on there. So I always read through it, you know, trying to glean out the 10 to 20% that can talk to us. The rest of it I just kind of gloss over. So here, again, this is in very Kabbalistic terms, but it just gives us insight into the undercurrent of all the different descriptions of Shlomo HaMelech's activities. Shlomo HaMelech made a fleet of ships. That's really what Ani means. But Ani is Lashon Yachid. Aniyah, Ani. Ani is in a single ship. Why does it say it that way? So, Moshe David Bali says, Ani also is a name of the Shekhinah. The Shekhinah. The Shekhinah is called Ani. That's a lot of significance to that. We'll get to, maybe we'll touch on that soon. But he says, when it says, Va'ani Ata Melech Shlomo Be'etzem Gover, that Shlomo HaMelech established an Ani, we translate it as a fleet of ships. What it means is, no, he set the Shekhinah up there, on the border, bordering on the land of Edom. Meaning, he was making sure to equip all the different areas of Eretz Yisrael with the properties, with the appropriate spiritual properties for what they needed. Here, somehow or the other, again, he explains this in Kabbalistic terms, I don't know exactly, but he was facing, the area facing the land of Edom, and the border facing Edom, he set it up with the correct type of the presence of Shekhinah. I suppose that means that he had the people there doing the right kind of avodah. I don't know exactly what that means. But he set it up such that there was the right sort of presence of Shekhinah to be bordering, facing off against the spiritual influence coming from the land of Eder. Okay? This gives us a little bit of insight to the undercurrent in these sukkim.
Anivah Hashiana.
Oh, that's right. See, it's Anivah Hashiana. It's important to note this, just as I heard from a Rebbe of mine, a lot of significance to this knowledge that the Shekhinah, that Ani is also a name for the Shekhinah, because what do we know the word Ani to mean? Me, I, right? So, what I heard from my Rebbe's was that Ani actually is the name of the Shekhinah Kiviyachol that's reflected in each individual. Each individual contains or manifests a very specific, individual, unique manifestation of the Shekhinah that is unequaled by any other Jew, not just today, but in history. Each person has his very unique reflection of the Shekhinah in him. And this is where the term of Ani, the essential Ani, is the divinity that's inside me. Okay. Now, Vayishlach Chiram Ba'ani, again we have the recurring theme of Chiram and Shlomo's cooperation. Chiram sent along with this fleet of ships, Esavodov, Anche Ani, Yisrede Hayam, his servants, the old salts, the ship, the seafarers, Im Avdei Shlomo, together with the servants of Shlomo, by Avayu Ophira, they came to Ophir. This was a source of a distinguished source of gold, special gold mines. By Chumi Shamzov, Abamers, Vashim Kika, and they took from there 420 talents of gold. I don't know what a talent is. I just know the kikar is translated as talent and it sounds good.
A lot.
What's that?
It's a lot.
A talent is how much is a talent? Talent is actually a...
on the board over there. It's a lot of gold.
Oh yeah? So, okay, a substantial amount. They brought it to Shlomo.
Did they bargain for it, negotiate for it?
Oh, so it's not so...
Just mind it.
What's that? Oh, so looking at the simple shot of the Pesach, it would look like this was simply Hefker, right? They knew that there were these gold mines in these areas, and they went and they took it from there. Some of our should do indicate that, oh, these wooded lands are actually populated and ruled, but this is also bringing out the state of affairs in Shlomo HaMelech's time, that he... all other nations consider themselves subject to him. And if he came to a land and said, all right, I'm mining 420 talents of gold, that was what he did. Okay. And now we move on. We move on to a classic part of the story of Shlomo. The story of Shlomo and the Queen of Sheba. Or the Queen of Sheba, right? The story of the Queen of Sheba is an illustration, but even more than that, it's actually in a sense a certain epitomization. We've been describing in very global terms the influence that Shlomo had on everybody around him, the effect that he had on the nations around. Here, we're giving you a specific example of what that looked like. Of what that looked like. Not that? Of the influence and the effect that Shlomo HaMelech had worldwide. I mean, we said that the kings used to send, you know, the people to hear his wisdom, the kings used to come to hear his wisdom, he was influencing the entire world. Here is just an example of one instance of such influence, where we get a more close-up look of what was going on, really on a much larger wholesale scale throughout Shlomo HaMelech's life. What's that?
He failed.
What do you mean by that?
He didn't.
So that's not necessarily a failure. That's not necessarily a failure. If Shlomo is asking, well, nicely, he failed because he ended up converting. That's not necessarily a failure. If we can get... I shouldn't say if we can get, because again, we already discussed, that's not our job per se. But I'll put it differently. If a non-Jew comes to recognize the truth of Hashem, and to dedicate himself to Hashem in the way that's expected from a non-Jew, that's a great accomplishment. That's a great accomplishment. And theoretically speaking, not from myself, but theoretically speaking, if we can get the world out there to do that without them converting, that's a great accomplishment. And it's a great benefit to them. A guy doesn't have to convert. And as far as we're concerned, a guy has to live the way Hashem expects him to. And if a guy is ready to do that, we give him a lot of credit. Human being, even before Jew, is a very, very great being. Right? And there's a lot of greatness in the human being, even before coming on Judaism, is taking it to a whole new level. But a human being who lives up to what Hashem wants a human being to be, can be a servant of Hashem, can be close with Hashem, and can get a lot of schar without ever converting. Hashem doesn't expect it of them. And that's why we're not, Judaism is not a membership tribe. Right? So, even if she doesn't convert, Shlomo HaMelech succeeded in spreading the knowledge of Hashem worldwide. So now, Malkas Sheva, Shaimas Hashem HaShlomo, we're going to go through these things slowly in order to understand the full intensity of what's going on here. The Queen of Sheba heard, was always hearing about the stories of Shlomo, L'shem Hashem, for the sake of Hashem. I'll explain momentarily what that means. We have to give that special attention. I'm just moving to the end of the process now. She was always hearing the stories of Shlomo for the sake of Hashem. So she came to try him with riddles. She wanted to test his wisdom. So, what does it mean that she was hearing about him, L'shem Hashem? So, there are three, more than three, but three explanations given, which I want to give each one its due attention. But they're not conflicting, and presumably they're all true. So first of all, she was hearing the reputation of Shlomo. Again, Shlomo's name was like just towering the world around, right? But she heard it as reflecting godliness, meaning Shlomo's reputation was such, it wasn't just that, wow, there's a world-renowned philosopher. But everything associated with Shlomo was associated with godliness. It was a wisdom. His wisdom was known as wisdom that reflected godliness, right? And therefore, it was like, it was a lot more than just Shlomo was a very wise man. It was his wisdom manifested a very clear association with divinity. Now here's an important point. I want to bring this out. I want to bring out this point. We often, here in this year per se, spend time making the point that material accomplishments on the part of Jews does not equal Kiddush Hashem. Right? You hear that there's a great Jewish basketball player who is just as good as any of the rest of them, or a Jewish boxer. You know, the fact that a Jew can punch as good as anybody else, it's not Kiddush Hashem. If you want to call it pride, call it national pride in a material way. It's got nothing to do with Hashem, right? What does it help if a Jew can, where's the Kiddush Hashem in the fact that Jews can play basketball just like anybody else? So, in fact, we said it's on the contrary. It's like a certain, the marshal we give to this is if you have a team of European scientists or doctors that move out somewhere to the jungles of Africa in order to research and to also try to help the locals there, right? And they move there with their families, and then their families have very clear that they're just not really a part of the reality here, right? They're kind of in their own bubble. They build themselves a campus, and they're kind of in their own bubble, and they're doing their thing, and they're researching, and all around them you have the tribals who are, banging on their bongo drums and with bones in their noses and dancing around fires. Okay? So now, you have this team of very high-class doctors and scientists who are raising their family there. But some of the kids start feeling like everybody around really knows how to do a good, the dances there, a bongo wonga dance, or whatever it is. And we just don't know how you do that. And it's like, if we're supposed to be reflecting European culture, which is supposed to be that much more, it's just a disgrace to European culture that a European kid can't do a good bongo wonga dance. Right? And therefore, we want to be able to go out there and show them that, on the contrary, we got to learn how to do that too, to show them that Europeans can bongo wonga just like any of the best Africans. So, is that adding covet to the prestige of these people? Or is it just lowering it? Right? So,
the dummy, the tribes, all the warriors, all their physical talent.
Okay. So, that's really the idea here also. No, there's no Kiddush Hashem in the fact that a Jew can banga wanga, that can break dance just like, whoever it is, or any of these other things. That's not Kiddush Hashem. That's like showing that Samish, like in the Mashal. Like if Nehemiah is asking, we find plenty throughout now that, yes, it is the material accomplishments of the Jewish people are glorified. Right? Whether it's in terms of battle, whether it's in terms of other things. Look at Shlomo. Right? Shlomo, we're not talking battle, but we're talking about immense material success that's very much put up on a pedestal here enough. The answer lies in these couple of words. If you notice, you'll see it plenty throughout Nas. But this is one of many instances where this answer is sprinkled all around Nas. L'shem Hashem. Yes, material accomplishment can definitely constitute a Kiddush Hashem when it is very clearly and openly a sign of Hashem. Meaning, if you have a person is going out there and having very great accomplishments that people are looking at with awe, and he is very clearly attributing to Hashem, not in a way of lip service that people will do, it's all just God, right? But in a way that really conveys that, such that when this person is doing whatever he does, everyone gets the message. This is the effect of a person. When a person connects to godliness, look at the success. Right? This is godly success. Right? And when you see his wealth, or when you see his prowess in battle, or whatever it is, if what you're seeing is, look how this person is connecting to the divine in a way that enables him to do this. That his successes are associated with the divine. His successes are associated with and are related to Hashem. So on the contrary, that definitely is Kiddush Hashem. That's why, yes, David HaMelech battles with Kiddush Hashem. Why? Because what was David HaMelech saying all the time? When David HaMelech said it, it was convincing. You saw it. It was not in Israel. He said it. It wasn't like, you know, the declaration was said at a news conference afterwards. But you saw him fighting. You saw him fighting. With David HaMelech, it was so clear that you saw Hashem operating in him. Okay? That's the way he expresses it. He expresses it. Right? We also quote this pasuk also, which brings up the same point. How does David HaMelech describe his achievements on the battlefield? What does he say? He becha'aruz gudu du melekha'adalek shur. Right? In you, he says, I chased after a unit of soldiers. And in my God, I jumped over a wall. You know, HaMelech is chasing the enemy, and there's a high wall there. He doesn't climb the wall. He just jumps right over it. Right? So, because David HaMelech is saying, you know, if you have a person inside a tank who's ready to take on a whole crowd of guys with baseball bats, I have a whole crowd of guys with baseball bats. 50 guys. And I have a guy inside a tank, and he's not fearlessly takes them on. Is he especially brave? Right? Is he like fearless? There's nothing to be scared of. David HaMelech is saying, this is my experience of going into battle. I'm running in Hashem. Like, why shouldn't I attack a mob of 200 soldiers? Right? So, this is so important to understand. This is a subtlety, but a very fundamental subtlety in understanding the what's behind. When do we glorify materials? When are material successes a source of national pride? When the material successes are bringing out and demonstrating the presence of Hashem in us. And this is Adarabba. This is where we say that we're a light unto the nations. Right? V'ro, this is from the last week's parsha, 2 weeks ago. V'ro, kol amei ha'aretz k'shem Hashem nikra lecha v'yaru mimecha. This is mamish what we're saying here. The nations around will see through your successes, right? This is last week's parsha, it's subway, right? After it describes all the brachas of the Jewish people, supernatural levels of what? Material success, right? How does the pasuk sum it all up? All the nations around will see that the name of Hashem is on you. They'll fear you. That's Kiddush Hashem. Of course that's Kiddush Hashem. When you see that a nation who is intensely dedicated to Hashem is enjoying all these different successes in all these different areas, those successes and those achievements definitely are Kiddush Hashem. So this is... Well, I hope it's not such a subtle split. It's a very fundamental split. Perhaps it's subtle, but it's fundamental, and I hope it's clear. This is a very, very important point to understand. We do not take pride on the national level. Well, we should be, but we do take pride. But we should not be taking pride on anything in the national level unless it's clearly associated with Hashem and bringing out the presence of Hashem in us. That's why, for example, the Six-Day War, a miraculous war. Was that? Could we call that Kiddush Hashem? It was. But there were those here who were working on turning it into a not Kiddush Hashem. Because you saw miracles, right? You saw miracles. Open miracles. open miracle, right? And look, this is Hashem fighting for his people. And Hashem fighting for his people. But you know what happened? Rabin was interviewed after the Six-Day War. Rabin was the chief of staff at the time. Right? He was interviewed after the Six-Day War. Said this was a claim that actually the Egyptians and the Jordanians had to explain it somehow. So they said that first they said that the English and the French were actually fighting with Israel. That there were English and French planes, and then that was debunked. And then Israel released a recording where the Egyptian, where Nasser and King Hussein were coordinating what exactly they'll say. But whatever it is, so after that they were interviewing Rabin. And they said to him that the Olam is saying that there was a secret weapon that they were using. A secret weapon that they were using. That was supplied by the U.S. It wasn't supplied by the U.S. And Rabin was offended. He said, it's not clear by now to the world that it's simply the skill of our soldiers. Right? Now this is Rabin Lishitasei, right? When Rabin Lishitasei, this is already my time. I heard him speaking at a Yom HaAtzmaut gathering, and he said, this is a man who knew how to quote Tanakh. Right? This is a man who knew how to quote. How did he quote it? He said, "Bekocheinu ba'otzem yadeinu asinu lanu et ha'chayil hazeh." Right? That's not what he said. Quoting the Pasuk, he said, with the might of our hands, right, we have achieved all this. Mamish in the Pasuk, he forgot the first two words of the Pasuk. Ten toimar, lest you say. Let's forget that. Bekocheinu, right? But this is what makes. So what is it? It's Jewish achievement, Jewish might. You lost the Kiddush Hashem. You lost the Kiddush Hashem. As long as you're saying, on the contrary, we have no way of doing this. Right? This is clearly Hashem pulsing in us. Kiddush Hashem. So this is the idea here. This is what we're saying here. This is really what brings out the significance of Shlomo's prestige. It was the fact that his wisdom the world around was clearly associated with divinity. When you heard about Shlomo, you heard about godliness. It was of a level or of a quality. I know that there were many brilliant people, but we never heard of a phenomenon where it was just so clearly of a divine nature. And this is really what frames the whole story of Shlomo HaMelech and his immense successes as a massive, unprecedented, but massive, unique levels of Kiddush Hashem. That his whole generation, his whole time manifested. So that's explanation number one, that she heard the reputation of Shlomo L'shem Hashem as associated with Hashem. And therefore, when she was coming, when she was intrigued by Shlomo, she was intrigued not only by Shlomo, but of this God that is being demonstrated through him. That's A. The other explanation, which might sound similar, but it's really a different point. She heard about Shlomo's immense wisdom. She heard about Shlomo's immense wisdom. And she heard L'shem Hashem, how all that was dedicated to Hashem. This is a different point, okay? When you hear about immense brains, right, whatever it is, such a person's opinion carries weight, right? And here she was hearing how all of his immense wisdom, sometimes you have a person who goes off on his own track once he's such a big chacham, right? He's going to be wiser than all those who preceded him. Any previously held wisdom or understanding or whatever it is are small on him, right? He's exceeding it all. But here she's hearing how all of his immense wisdom was being channeled into his dedication to Hashem, his Torah study, his Torah teaching, his service of Hashem. This also brought out, I'm saying, this is coming from a bit of a different angle, but another element of the Kiddush Hashem, you see, wow, there's so much to be invested. Say that, you know, have an absolute genius who also has a certain religious affiliation. Say that, you know, he does his religious duties and the rest of his immense wisdom goes to all kinds of other areas. His religion doesn't exactly have the capacity for his wisdom. does what he needs to do, but the wisdom goes to all kinds of other studies. But here, yes, all of his immense wisdom was the capacity of Judaism wasn't too small for him. Bringing out the Kippur Hashem in another way.
She's impressed that he was devout.
What's that?
She's impressed that he was devout.
Ah, so here's the point. You see devoutness in a simpleton, say that, you give a little smirk. When you see such a brilliant person, who nobody in the world surpasses him, and you see that he's devout, you say, whoa, there's something to that. That's the point that we're making here. Right? She was impressed by, it's such an unbelievable mind, right? A phenomenon, a historic phenomenon in terms of brains, is so devout, there must be something to that. This is kind of bringing out the same point, but from a different angle. Okay? So she came to try him with riddles. Now there's a third explanation which is going on a different track. These two are basically on the same track, right? It's associating Schlinger's Chochma with Hashem, her understanding and the way it hit her of how his Chochma was associated with Hashem. Meaning, Shlomo Melech was creating a situation where the world around they were impressed with Hashem and his service. Right? That's what was going on here. But the Rosh Hashanah of Bali goes on a bit of a different track. He says, L'Hashem Hashem is referring back to her. She heard all of his reputations with Shem Hashem. Meaning, she developed a sincerity with all the things that she was hearing about. This could really be the effect of the first two pshatim that we mentioned. But it's bringing out the effect that it had on her. As she's hearing these things, she is developing inside in herself a desire to connect to this. A desire to connect to this. Her sincerity is growing. And she wants to be a part of the God that Shlomo HaMelech represents. Where was Shiva? That's known. I don't know. I'm very bad with the geography. But that is very clear. It was in the Mepharshim said the connection is the Ophir that they bought the gold from. It was Mamish in that area. So I don't know. But Shiva is a known area. I don't know exactly.
Where Mozambique is.
What's that?
Either Mozambique or Yemen. Or Yemen.
Oh.
The bottom of the Red Sea.
What's that? Ethiopia? Which was the prison?
Mozambique.
Ethiopia is Kush, right.
Mozambique's next to Ethiopia. It's next country down. On the coast there.
Right in that locale. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So now. Yeah. Yeah. So she came to test him with riddles. Meaning, the Mephoshim say, the idea was, riddles, she wanted to see the godliness. She wanted to see it firsthand. She wanted to see the God, the divinity in his wisdom. So therefore what she did was, she came up with riddles that could have a number of different correct answers. And she wanted to see if he would say the one that she identified. Now this is something that's not an issue of wisdom. Right? If you're an unbelievably brilliant man, you'll say all the right answers. But she wanted to see if he would say the one that she's thinking. That's what she wanted to see. Okay? The truth is that there could be brilliance within this. There could be an issue of brilliance to an extent. Right? That's the story that they say about Reb Chaim Brisker, where there was some sort of situation. I forgot exactly what it was, but he was. His authority on a certain issue was being challenged by a certain brother. So Reb Brisker was trying to like tell him, look, you just accept my authority on this. And the Reb was saying, woman, and who said you're any bigger than me. So Reb Chaim Brisker told him, he said, why don't you tell me some shtickle tyra? Now, if you recently in your learning came up with a shtickle tyra, you know, like a whole tyra essay, tell me the beginning of it. Tell me your question. Tell me how it starts. And this Rav did. So Chaim Brisker said, and here's how you answered it. And then you supported it with this. And then you asked that. from the way the Rav presented his beginning of it, Rav Chaim Brisker picked up on his way of thinking and then moved through the Rav's whole shtickle Torah, not everything that could be said on it, but what you said and how you answered it in, according to your way of thinking. And the man was blown away. They said, now can you accept that I can encompass more than you? Now accept my authority. So this could be an issue of brilliance too, but here apparently it was completely arbitrary, meaning there could be a few different answers here. You tell me the one I'm thinking. What's that? Which? The story of...
She comes up to him and says, I'm thinking of a number. What am I thinking of?
He tells her, must be excited. So I'm not sure. I was also a little bothered by that. Like, Stan is asking. So if so, it's already, you're moving out of the sugya of Chachma, and you're moving into the sugya of HaKadosh. You know, like, what? Where's the Chachma there? There must have been some combination. That's also why I brought in the story of Reb Chaim, of the ability to use his wisdom to connect to what would be the thing that he was thinking. I'm not sure. I don't know. Okay, we'll stop here.